Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm your host, Jason Whitlock. Colin Cowherd is still on vacation. All right, stopping by the show today, former NBA star Jim Jackson, basketball analyst Chris Broussard, Super Bowl champs Eric Davis and Mark Slareth, radio host Doug Gottlieb, and of course, blog king Jason McIntyre.
It's Larith.
Larith.
We'll talk Richard Sherman's crazy new quest, LeBron James going back to Miami, and O.J. Simpson getting paroled on live TV. But we begin with Colin Kaepernick and all the people who can't resist caping up for Black Tim Tebow. The Kaepernicks were out in full force yesterday. Kaepernicks are people who can't get out of Twitter's sunken place. That illogical, brainwashed place where Colin Kaepernick is the modern-day Nelson Mandela. Kaepernicks gush about how well-spoken and thoughtful Kaepernick is, even though Kaepernick rarely speaks and communicates mostly through retweets of divisive political commentary. The Kaepernicks were absolutely mortified that Michael Vick had the audacity to politely ask Black Tebow to cut his hair and present a business-like appearance. Black men in suits, ties, and with short haircuts were all over TV yesterday blasting Vick for gently pushing Kaepernick to dress for success. ESPN's Damian Woody, while wearing a suit, tie, and short haircut, called Vick's advice preposterous. And then Woody and former NFL running back Thomas Jones had the nerve to come at the king over Twitter, with Jones calling me a coward. My name was on the Twitter streets. Big mistake. Woody Jones, you ain't ready for these journalism corners. I've been out in these streets since 1990. I've been out here longer than Desus and Merrill been alive. These two Kaepernicks have a TV show on Vice, and they tried to trash me and Vick. Take a listen.
Jason Whitlock invited him, like, yo, come ruin your legs.
Yo, come here, come.
I think he needs to speak for himself.
I think he really does. Hey, first thing we got to get Colin to do is cut his hair.
All right, okay. All right. My man, you played like with this, straight backs like for this, like 40 years.
You know what I'm saying? Like, come on. Come on, Ron Mexico.
All right. Also, when you cut your hair, they didn't accept you then. Like,
hey, come on, fam.
Anytime you find yourself agreeing with Jason Whitlock,
no.
Unless you're at a buffet, no.
I got to be honest. I like these dudes. They're funny. But they're dead wrong about Vick's advice. Black millennials think the older generation is obsessed with how random white people view us. We're not. Being professional, dressing professional, isn't about how we're perceived by white people. It's about how we feel about ourselves. And finally, let me address Charlemagne the God. This Kaepernick is actually dangerous. He thinks he's smart.
And my lawyer at the time told me verbatim, you have to cut your hair. You have to go get a job. When you come to court, you have to wear a suit. Okay, or buttoned up. Don't come in here in no T-shirt and jeans and all white Air Force Ones. You have to look presentable in front of the judge. So Michael Vick's advice is actually great for actual criminals who are going to be facing the judge for their various charges in the future.
Look, Colin Kaepernick works in an industry controlled by white businessmen. He plays the highest profile, most important position in all of sports. Kaepernick took a strong stand on one of the most polarizing issues in American history. Given those dynamics, if Cap wants to be taken seriously and affect real change, he should project a more professional image with his appearance. If he's seeking Twitter fame and the adulation of Kaepernicks, he should keep the afro and continue tweeting his way to freedom. All right. I got a couple of Kaepernicks on the desk with me.
Eric Davis,
Chris Broussard, Gottlieb, I'm not sure where he's from.
Why can't you pronounce Slareth? That's the biggest thing.
Anyway, am I right or wrong?
Well, hold on. First of all, you up here talking about being professional with a T-shirt on, and usually you wear a hat indoors, which is not professional. What you talking about, man?
Look, first of all, I look very professional. And we're on FS2 today, so it's a casual Wednesday for us. But anyway, I'm not wrong about the guy needing to project a professional image if he wants to accomplish all of his goals. Affect real change, get in the NFL.
No. You are wrong. You are wrong because you can have on a T-shirt
and be professional, okay? You don't have to necessarily have on a suit and tie to be professional. Russell Simmons does it all the time. I think we all would think it,
hip-hop.
Doesn't matter. We're talking about being professional.
And
it may be hip-hop.
Different rules. Okay.
NFL, different rules.
Does it depend on what T-shirt you're wearing? If you're wearing a Fidel Castro T-shirt, if you're wearing socks that have socks that have cops as pigs, and remember, he's not just any football player. He's the quarterback. He's a quarterback. And there's a different sort of class by which you're supposed to carry yourself. And this isn't just a black thing that you have to cut your hair.
You started this by saying he has to dress and look a certain way to be perceived as professional. Correct. Cornel West has a goatee, has a big afro, everything is.
But one, he's brilliant, but secondly, he's in a completely different field.
Okay, you're talking about the importance of fields. If he was going for an interview to be an accountant or a banker, maybe. This is the NFL. How many dozens of guys have afros, cornrows? Michael Vick had cornrows at quarterback.
Where did Michael Vick end up?
He ended up there not because of his hairstyle, but because he was fighting and killing dogs. Hold on. When he had the cornrows, he got the richest NFL contract in history to that point.
But he did not take an anti-police stance and then have this.
He's not taking an anti-police stance. He's taking a pro-African-American stance here
2 days ago and said the guy needed to cut his hair.
That's Mike's opinion.
So how you gonna
Based on what advice Mike had been given to get himself back in after coming
as
out of jail.
He had a lot further to go than Kaepernick. Kaepernick's done nothing wrong.
Cutting his hair didn't get him the job. Guys, Mike Vick hurt their business.
Mike Vick cutting his hair did not get him back in the NFL. Stop for a second. Stop. Mike Vick's talent, along with some wink, wink, nudge, nudge from Tony Dungy, is what got him back in. Okay. It had nothing to do with him cutting his hair.
But didn't you say, I believe on this show 2 days ago, that the look that he has portrays what? A militant black image, correct?
Just answer the question.
Okay.
Yes, I did. But that look is on every team already.
Not at quarterback. Okay?
I beg of you to allow me to finish.
I'm trying to come around to a point.
Okay.
Okay? The idea is, yes, it is other places, but there aren't people leading a protest against police brutality and their quarterback. It's a confluence of hair, stance, image that Mike Vick's saying, like, look, this is not going to get you solely back in the NFL, but it begins the change of the perception of who he is and what he's about.
He doesn't want to change
the image of who he is and what he's about.
Then he's not going to get back in the NFL. That's what Mike's saying.
Listen, he has a negative image for one reason and one reason only, because he has taken a bold and radical stance on behalf of African-American men. Anyone who does that. Malcolm X was as clean cut as they come. Bad, negative image. Not because he did something wrong, but because of the stance he took. Martin Luther King, before he died, got killed. Negative image publicly. It is not because of the hair. It's because of the stance he has taken, pure and simple.
Now, let me take this back to Cap. When you say because you don't have anyone at the quarterback position doing that, how many black quarterbacks? Number one, look at the number of black quarterbacks in the league, okay? The percentages.
But hold on.
RG3 had dreads, okay?
Let me finish.
Michael Vick, cornrows when he was at the quarterback. It's a cultural thing, okay? Look at the percentages. It's not as many. And then when Tom Brady, and this is the funny thing, when Tom Brady grows his hair out, when he has a beard and he's looking all scruffy, we don't talk about the negative image of him looking. He doesn't have the same baggage. He's got five Super Bowls.
He plays for the Patriots. He didn't take some polarizing stance. And again, you have to understand who you work for.
I get it.
Chris, if he worked for the choir that is applauding him. He took this bold stance. If they were giving out the jobs, you're 100% right. But let's deal with the reality of the industry that he works in, who signs the check, and what they're comfortable with, and how the football is marketed. On this network and every other network, it's marketed through patriotism. That's why it generates so much money. Again, if it's like a rapper that wants to come in and preach education or whatever. It doesn't really work that well in that industry. It doesn't. It doesn't sell as much.
If he kept the afro and stopped protesting against police brutality.
Which he's already
said he's going to do.
He's going to stand for the anthem.
Yeah, right.
But he's not stopped doing the things he's doing in terms of activism. If he kept the afro and stopped doing the activism, would he be in the NFL?
I'm not sure.
That's the issue. It's not the hair. That's all I'm saying.
Everybody's trying to reduce it to one issue is keeping him out of the NFL. I happen to believe it's a number of issues.
I agree with that, too.
And so
There's not one thing he can do. And what Mike Vick is talking about, and trust, because I got family that's been in the joint and because I'm passionate about mass incarceration, what he's talking about is changing your mindset. And so cutting your hair. There's a reason why when you go to the military, they shave your head off. They want to bring you down to a point where they can reach you mentally. And so they start taking your identity away.
That's the military.
I understand that, but there's a science behind it. There's a reason why the Nation of Islam puts the bow tie on and the suits and all that other stuff. It's about changing the mindset. And what Vic is saying is that if cut the hair off, be more professional, present that image again, and you can still work for what you're talking about working for,
and you
but project
all,
a different
but you
image.
You can also do all of those things without the haircut. You can also be professional. So that's what I'm saying. This is not about a haircut. I agree completely. It is not simply the stance that he took. It has to do with play. It has to do with the feel that you think is going to come when you put him on a team. This is multi-layered. I get that. But what I'm still trying to say, you can't say that this person can't conduct himself in a professional manner. Be presented in a professional manner and be treated in a professional manner based on their hair.
Listen, if I had that hair, I'd be saying exactly what you're saying there.
but there's another element to this which I think we're also going around. You guys both kind of touched on it, that there's more than just the hair and the protest. There's the play. But there's also, remember, he was persona non grata in San Francisco before the protest because of how he conducted himself as the leader of the San Francisco 49ers. Headphones on in the facility where he wasn't really a leader. Look, quarterbacks...
That's changed.
Hold on, though. Has it?
Yeah, quarterback, he won the Lynn Eschmann Award
given
by his teammates
of the protest.
Look, that's not a change.
Quarterbacks are, among other things, they're dudes, okay? They walk into a huddle and they command respect. White, black, or otherwise, they have there's a different feel to that position because it's a position of leadership and it's a position where you have to be more prepared than anybody else. And I think what Jason's getting at and what Mike Vick's getting at is the perception of him isn't just militant and anti-police brutality. It's he's been a guy who has fought the way it's supposed to be done at the position and add this in. And by cutting his hair and at some point speaking for himself and saying, look, I've evolved, okay, I've grown up. I want to lead a franchise. I'm ready to do so. I think that changes the perception immediately.
And fighting back against that is like, no, everybody else is wrong, and I'm the guy who's right. No, I think he's more equipped to run a franchise now than he ever has been because he wasn't liked, as you said, he wasn't liked by a lot of guys. He wasn't capable of running a team like because it all came so fast that I think his head sort of went Hollywood on him. And a lot of guys didn't know him. That's the reason he was that way within that locker room where he was on that island. I think what happened, the reason he won the Lynn Eschmont Award, it's not just about the stance. It's because I think that stance gave the guys in the locker room an opportunity to see him as a person, to talk to him, to actually have conversations. He wasn't having conversations with people. I think now, even on another team, he will have conversations. Whether you disagree with him or not, if Colin Kaepernick walked into this room, you're going to have a conversation with him and get to know him as to who he is and see who he is and what he's about. And whether you agree with it or not, you may learn something about this guy, which is the respect that you talk about. There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL that have been. I've played with them. You get Mark Schlereth out here. He's going to tell you there are quarterbacks that will be on your team that are that guy. And they're just dudes. They're not the guys that people want to go to hang with. You know, the backup, everyone loved the backup because of this guy.
Rap. I want to make one point. And Eric, you know this, and everybody, he didn't win this in a unanimous vote. He won. But again, a lot of times it only takes 8 or 9 votes because it's split out so much. And so the guys that were into his protest, I think, voted for him, and he won. But
we know the tally.
No, we
don't. It's fair to say the protest was brave because we all knew that this was a possibility when you put yourself out in front of him.
He was an expendable player.
All right, welcome back. Doug Gottlieb and Eric Davis are back, and we're joined now by a Super Bowl champion who will introduce himself, Mark
Schlereth.
All right, let's move to Pittsburgh.
Way to go, Stink. You got it right.
Yeah. Where Le'Veon Bell declined the Steelers' offer of a long-term contract worth about $12 million a year because the running back wanted more guaranteed money. Bell's decision might bother Steelers fans, but it earned praise from Richard Sherman, who tweeted, quote, "Happy to see Le'Veon Bell not be bullied into a fluffed-up long-term deal. Maybe fans will start to hold teams accountable." Sherman has already gone on record saying players need to strike if they want a guaranteed contract, and I think he's a great voice for this issue. I think he's a bit naive thinking that fans are going to jump to players' sides, but I think he's on the right message and the right issue. And again, I'm a fan that doesn't think they should give guaranteed contracts, but I respect him for fighting for it, and I think he's the right voice for it, and I think this would be a great legacy for him if he were the guy to push that through. And it may not happen in his career, but if he can be the face of that, good for him.
I'm with you on that. I think that I hope players do eventually get guaranteed contracts. I don't think it's going to change the level of play, but the stars have to do it. Those are the guys that have to fight for it. The stars of the league. Sherm is a star within the NFL. The Bradys, the Rodgers, the Von Millers, the J.J. Watts, these guys have to be the voice. Just like in basketball, LeBron James and Steph Curry and Chris Paul, these guys get up and they speak about issues that they want the league to address and how they want things to go because they have that leverage that they can. Not just the guaranteed contracts they already have, but they are the stars of the league. If Sherm, as a perennial all-pro within the league, can't stand up and say something, who can?
Right. I love seeing him stand up. I love seeing him talk about it. I love seeing him talk about striking. Here's the issue. The players have never had the yarbles to do it. They've never stood up for themselves because they've always let the owners dictate. And I hold myself accountable. I didn't have the onions to do it either. And the problem with Richard Sherman being the voice of this, it's not a problem, but here's the issue. This is a league that's made up of what I call 80-20, the 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
20% of the players make 80% of the money. Mm-hmm. So if you're making $12 million a year, you said, yeah, let's stand up and strike. Where a majority of the guys, believe it or not, minimum wage guys, living paycheck to paycheck, when the owners lock us out, paycheck
Mark.
To paycheck.
Mark, I grew up paycheck to paycheck with my mama. $800,000-$700,000, that ain't paycheck.
But they get to the end of the off season, and these guys can't afford.
They're living stupidity.
Of course they do, but that's the issue. That the truth of the matter is, if you want to strike,
right,
because you have to understand what your players' association, what your players are doing, and the way they live. If you want to strike, you have to say, hey, here's our date, January 1. We walk away from the playoffs. We walk away from the Super Bowl. You want to hurt the owners? Because let me tell you, from a player standpoint, 4 games at the beginning of the season doesn't hurt the owners. You know what the owners are selling? They're selling drugs to drug addicts, right? The NFL, the fan base of the NFL are a bunch of drug addicts. We're going to watch it regardless. If you miss the first 4 games as an NFL fan, and you come back, you know what? Woohoo! NFL football's back.
Hold on. First of all, you're right. It's about the rank and file members, not about the top 20%, as you said, right? And we're also right to say the reason is that it's a problem in our country, right? Whether you make $700,000 or $70,000 or $15,000 a year, we don't protect ourselves against that rainy day. And if you look at when they agreed to the last deal, remember, Roger Goodell only has power over this league because it wasn't negotiated any differently by the NFLPA. That's their fault, and they've never been accountable for it.
Yes.
Okay? But, like, Mark, let's also remember, one, there's a red herring. There are guaranteed contracts, signing bonuses. Le'Veon's is only 1 year, but it's a guaranteed deal. So there are guarantees. And you can't walk away January 1 with the playoffs when you have a collective bargaining agreement, okay? You're going to be in breach of contract. You're going to lose all of your money, not just some of your money. There's got to be a reality to this. And I think the reality is nobody wants a long-term deal in a collision, violent sport like football because your body can't hold up for 3 or 4 years. You're better off fighting for more money in the short term.
No, you've already had guaranteed contracts. They guaranteed one for Brady at one point. So, and that's what I'm saying. Once you can't say that you can't do it once you do it. You can't say that you can't do it in a violent game once it's been done. Because it's already been done. So the thing about it, that's what I'm saying. And even in an 80-20 league, as you're saying, Mark,
right.
The only way that 20 can get their money guaranteed is for, I mean, the 80 can get their money guaranteed is for the 20 to stand up. And that's all I'm talking about. That's why I'm still back to, I applaud Sherm for what he's doing.
But the voices but the 80 have to do it. Them out. The 80 over, you know, overwhelmingly overpower
no,
them.
No, they won't. That's always the assumption. If guys understand that this helps me as well,
Is Richard Sherman going to come off some of his money when those guys have to pay?
Isn't that what happened when baseball missed the World Series? Didn't the Players Association pay guys' bills until they got a deal done?
Yes.
And that's a Players Association.
And the money is there.
Right.
But remember this. Baseball's popularity has never fully recovered missing that World Series.
That's because baseball guys don't run into one another. It's the gladiator sport.
No, it's because you can't bet on it.
No,
it recover after with the steroids, and then after the steroids, it got boring again.
You'll still be able to do the same betting, and it's football is still the gladiator sport. Human beings like watching those collisions. It's just better.
I'm not talking this better. I will say this.
Fans will never, ever hold owners accountable. Because fans root for laundry. They root for teams. And that's the bottom line. You know what? Fans get outraged when a guy says, hey, I've outplayed my contract, and I still have 2 years left on it. Honor your deal!
After allegedly getting into a bar fight and punching a DJ in the face, police have yet to confirm Zeke's involvement. The running back has a history of questionable decision-making, and even legendary party guy Jerry Jones says Zeke still has a lot to learn.
It's like a rock star wherever he goes in terms of attention. And anybody that thinks about it, but certainly anybody that's experienced that, knows that takes some getting used to. You have to learn many aspects of that. Certainly, Zeke is evolving and being subject to needing to learn how to deal with the media and social media the way it is today.
All right, listen, I'm a Jerry Jones homer most of the time. I think this is a unique situation for Zeke, for the Cowboys and for Jerry Jones. I don't know if Jerry knows how to properly support him. He's said something about he's got to adjust to being a rock star. I don't think that's Zeke's issue. I think Zeke has to adjust to being a mature person. And, you know, Dallas knows how to help Dez Bryant and some of the other trouble players. But Zeke's issue is unique. And it's a personality quirk. He's fun-loving, and he's not very mature. Jerry Jones and that organization are going to have to try a new game plan with this guy because the stuff they've done for Dez Bryant I don't think works here. And Jerry's got to provide this guy more help.
Jerry is not going to change it. That is the culture. It's always been that way, and that's why he pointed out that, you know what, you came onto a rock star team. That's a part of it. Right. Jerry's not going to change. There are certain cultures. Seattle has a certain culture. New England has one. Pittsburgh has one. And they don't change their culture for you. You come in and you understand this is the way things are done, and we expect you to figure it out and conduct yourself. That Dez Bryant, I will continue to say, it wasn't a culture change. It was because we don't want you missing games. Jerry Jones is not going to change the way it is. And I got drafted by the 49ers. It's different. They were the world champs. I came in there from my little tiny school, and that's like, and we were rock stars in the Bay. Whatever you wanted, whatever you needed it, you got it. And it's different. You have to learn how to adjust. Zeke has to, you said it, he's got to grow up. He's got to learn how to adjust because Jerry is not going to change the culture.
I will say this. Just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional. And guys have to come in and learn how to be professionals. But I believe it's on the organization as well to teach them how to be professional sometimes. And, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes you have to parent players. And you have to have enough courage within your organization to say, listen, we're going to take a recess for a little while until you can grow up enough to have the opportunity to come back and play for us. And that has to be done from the organization at times. I'll never forget. I don't even know.
I'm sorry. What do you mean take a recess?
Don't let him play. Suspend him for
a game. You're hurting me.
Yeah, I know.
I don't care if this dude.
You're the rest of the team.
Right. No, I know. I care. I know.
I understand.
You are. I care. Which I hope.
Hold on. You've played sport. I mean, you played at the highest level, right? Remember when you'd mess up in practice and then everybody has to run because of you? It's the same idea.
No, it doesn't happen like that at the highest level.
I'm saying when you're growing up. He's saying if you're going to act like a child, we're going to treat you like a child.
They're children. You're either my children.
You're either coaching or allowing it to happen. That's Herm Edwards-ism.
But this is also the Dallas Cowboys. What Eric, I think, is saying, and I agree with
this. They allow it to happen.
But this is kind of who the Cowboys have been. Like, Randy Gregory is still on their team.
Right.
Right? Like, you go throughout their roster, and they've always employed. They didn't try and change behavior. They didn't try and change. They would put a cop with an off-duty cop with guys to just make sure that guy didn't get. They wouldn't draft better character guys.
Right.
They just put a policeman so that it wouldn't get out or so that there wouldn't be a bar fight. So you'd whisk him out. They had Pac-Man Jones, even after all his issues he had in Tennessee. Like, this is. You even have Jerry Jones, like, right? Right message, wrong messenger. Like, you got to learn how to handle being a star. Wait, aren't you the guy that we had pictures of a woman with her head in your lap? Like, that's who the Cowboys are.
That's what stars do, though.
That's what the Cowboys are.
And that's what they are. They are stars, and that's a part of it. And that's what I'm saying. And I'm just not one. These are grown men. This is not middle school. How do you
get him to mature? You're in charge.
You may not. I played with some guys who never matured. You played with some guys, I'm sure, that never matured.
But it's different now with social media to where you're not going to do it out of the club.
We'll suspend you.
And that's why they put someone, like I said, with Dez. If you think if he's going to start missing games, that's it. But don't take him away from me when he hasn't done anything.
Well, I've always felt from the standpoint of a championship kind of character team and great leadership. Great leaders care more about the people they lead than they care about themselves. And if you don't have that kind of atmosphere and that kind of camaraderie on your team, you came into a San Francisco 49ers team as a young guy from a small school with a culture of championship. You didn't want to be the guy to screw that up.
No, you wasn't going to be the guy to screw it up. But hold on. You also had some crazy guys in that locker room. So we can't act like we didn't.
Did no one ever advise
you? Oh, your championship team? Sure.
Correct. No one in San Francisco advised you about a barbershop and a proper hairstyle?
Never.
No one.
Never.
Never.
Down.
All right, welcome back. Doug Gottlieb, Chris Broussard are back, and we're joined now by Jim Jackson. Let's move to O.J. Simpson, who will appear in front of a Nevada parole board tomorrow seeking release after serving 9 years of a 33-year prison sentence for kidnapping and armed robbery. The hearing will be televised on ESPN, CNN, and Fox News, among others, which is fitting since O.J.'s murder trial pretty much launched cable news. My take on O.J. and the impact that O.J. had on sports society is he accelerated the racial divisiveness that we now have in sports media. It first started in cable news. Fox News launched after O.J., MSNBC, Court TV. People realized during the O.J. trial, oh, man, have a big race debate on TV? Mm-hmm. Everybody will watch it. And now it's seeped its way into the sports media world where everything is so racially polarizing. That, to me, is O.J.'s impact of the original murder trial. And it's 25 years later, and the sports world is now dealing with the ramifications of that.
I think that, one, from a sports perspective, as a former athlete, one thing you take out of it is if somebody's selling your stuff, you better go get a lawyer and don't go in the room and bust up in there trying
That's
to get
right.
it. But I think it had more of a cultural issue in regards to O.J. being kind of untouchable. Was he really white? Was he black? Was he with the black community? Then when it went down, you saw the black community kind of huddle around O.J.
Yeah, yeah.
They said this could have been my father, could have been my uncle, could have been my cousin. So we finally got off on something over the years of being probably illegally persecuted or something.
Unjustly.
But then he goes and does this, and then the culture's like, man, what is he doing? Well, I mean, so from a sports perspective, you're talking about, I think, guys internally, we didn't see O.J. that way. We saw it as something. I knew I was younger when he was, you know, playing. So I knew who he was. Yeah, but a lot of guys culturally didn't look at O.J. inside of sports as this guy. You know what I mean? When it went down, I think it was more culturally.
Well, it depends.
Me, I'm talking about from my perspective.
And I'm not old enough either, but, you know, my dad, when he was living, told me, like, he was arguably the greatest running back of all time. Yeah, and the irony to what you're saying, Jason, which I think is mostly true, which is the race debate, the crazy part was he was the first guy to come out from behind the mask and be a black man who corporate white America was willing to allow to be one of their sponsors, right? He was everywhere. He crossed over into the media, and he was huge. And, of course, in our generation, the Naked Gun, where he was kind of a comical character before this all went down. And then there's the irony to getting Caponed, right? Getting off on a double murder charge when they got you, and then in jail for stealing your own stuff. Yeah. But, like, look, to me, the impact is on a multitude of levels. First, he was the first guy to really build his own brand. Like, we shouldn't forget how powerful his brand was and how he was able to create this image, which was completely false of who he was. But also, it's also about timing, when and where you do something. He got off not just because he was a black man, but because of the Rodney King hearing and what a farce that was and how many people, not just in the black community, but in the white community, were upset that those cops got off the year before, right? So there was racial, and had it happened now, OJ would have been caught because his cell phone would have triangulated that he was there. They wouldn't have needed the blood. So all of those things combined, and it's like reality TV that I can't wait to watch.
I think he's also the symbol for the end of kind of this age of innocence with athletes. Mm-hmm. Like, even though athletes were in, you know, did things back in the day, it wasn't as publicized. We didn't know about it as much. And he was not the first one. You know, Chuck Muncy with the cocaine and Lawrence Taylor and, you know, Magic Johnson getting the HIV. There were all these other things that showed you, well, these athletes might be heroes on the court, but not necessarily off the field or off the court. But OJ would be the greatest example and the poster child of that. So now we don't expect as much from our athletes off the field as we once did, where we thought they're these all-American guys off the field as well.
But you still put them into we still hold guys to a higher standard off the field. If you look at now, LeBron has changed the game in regards to, it's different because from an ownership perspective, from a branding perspective, what he's been able to do outside of basketball, now guys are looking at that saying, that's what I want to do. You know what I mean? So he's kind of taken that mantle and even pushed it further.
I'm going to connect it to OJ because what I see from a lot of athletes today, and I don't blame them, it's like, I don't want to be OJ. I don't want to be the athlete who got this wealth and fame and left the community. And so there has been a bit of a positive impact from OJ. Because, I don't want to speak for LeBron, and I'm sure there's the many things motivating him. But if I become a famous athlete, I want to remain connected to the community I came from, Akron, and in service.
I think that's more of a hip-hop generation thing, too, though. I mean, in regards to really keeping it real how I grew
Nobody
up, I want to bring it
to
back.
Be OJ,
but
though.
See, I think and as much as I disagree with OJ, who, let's face it, he was really the ultimate sellout. That's what he was. When you talk about the African-American mm-hmm. community, there are a lot of blacks in sports and out of sports whose greatest aspiration is to be like OJ in terms of beloved by the white community and almost lead a quote-unquote white life. There are blacks, and there's a lot of athletes today that still feel the way that OJ do. OJ's one of the few African-Americans that had the means to do it, but there are a lot of militant, if you want to call it militant, blacks like that, but there are also a lot that aspire to be just like OJ. I'm telling you, they don't want to say OJ, but they want that life that he has.
But so here's the question from a white guy. Do you think, is it an actual cognitive thought, I want to be beloved by the white community, or I just want to be beloved? I just want to feel loved.
A lot is the white. There's a lot of black athletes that won't even date black women. Yeah. I have no problem with interracial marriage, but there are a lot that won't even look at a black woman. I'm telling you, you know it's true.
Is that about the white community or about just the girls that they
those
like?
Are about, that's their no, those
it's
are about, some,
it's about acceptance. Because exactly. Depending on how you were raised and brought up, depending on what demographic, a lot of athletes say, listen, I want to separate myself from that aspect, this is how I'm getting my marketing up. This is how I can make more money if I'm accepted from the white community.
Based upon who they date?
Yes.
Don't you think there's also like mixed race kids have not always been accepted either now.
But I'm talking about it, but it's a little bit different when you're an athlete, high profile celebrity, an athlete. And I'm telling you, Chris is right from this perspective, is that you disassociate yourself in order to make it at a higher level, to get the better endorsement, to not be associated with this kind of demographic. It does happen and it's still permanent.
I want to add this little bit of nuance to Chris's point, though. Chris, and you made a point on the fly that we got to think about, but I see a lot of athletes dating choices, socializing choices, whatever, but publicly what they do to try to clean up their personal decisions, the connection publicly to the black community, I support this, I support that. I see a lot of that.
There's certainly a lot. Like, I'm not saying every black athlete is
I'm
saying there's a good amount that are like that.
I'm saying even the athletes that you feel are disassociating themselves through some of the decisions they make it a point not to try to be seen like O.J. Simpson. They're involved in charitable work or public things through social media, trying to present a different image than perhaps what they're really living. That's what I think the O.J. effect is. I don't think any athlete wants to be seen the way O.J. was seen.
Of course,
they may want to live that
way.
No. I'm not talking about the murder part. I'm talking about even before that. Me and Ralph Wiley. Friends for a long time, and he knew O.J. and wrote about O.J. before the murders and everything, and was calling this guy for what he was. Everybody already knew that.
But the thing is, like, remember, we're thinking of 25 and 30-year-olds that they don't know about O.J. and the sellout aspect of it. They don't even know about O.J. the athlete. Their first knowledge of O.J. was the murder and the trial and everything. And that's actually why the documentary was so good. I mean, it was really long, but it was so good because it told a lot of the backstory about who he was and what he became. So I think we kind of oversell the O.J. story pre-murder because we're old enough and educated enough on the history of O.J. Simpson, whereas most modern-day athletes aren't. I don't think they use him as a reference.
We're going to have to hit this again tomorrow. All right, welcome back. Chris Broussard and Jim Jackson are back. We're joined now by the founder of The Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to Miami, which some people are speculating is where LeBron James wants to be after next season. LeBron posted a picture of himself in a boat overlooking the city with the caption, "For all those that had anything to do with me being where I am today, I just want to say thank you. #blessed. LeBron's been criticized in the past for switching teams, but I think it would be great if he went back to Miami. I'd love to see him reunite with Pat Riley. I think it would show some maturity. I hope it happens.
What?
Go ahead, Chris.
I've been told by a source. He ain't going back to Miami. And it's the thing. We know he's King James. He's also King Drama. LeBron loves drama. Yeah. I bet he loves the fact that right now, we're not talking about the Golden State Warriors. We're talking about LeBron James, and he likes tweaking us with stuff like this. But, you know, to answer the question, I wouldn't have a problem. I'd like to see him stay in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. But if he goes elsewhere, so be it. The problem is this. If he goes somewhere else and does not win a championship, I think it actually looks worse than if he stayed in Cleveland, fought the good fight, but doesn't win it.
The only reason I'd push back on that, Chris, is, again, he'd be taking three straight different teams to the finals for, 8 years in a row? That's incredible.
But hold on. He's going to get – if he gets to the finals in the West – you're talking about if he stayed in Miami.
No, if he went to Philadelphia, Boston, he's going to have options. Anywhere he goes will make
it
anywhere a contender.
He can go anywhere to the finals.
But what I love about this is it's a players' league, guys, and LeBron is controlling the chessboard. The owners don't have the power. LeBron does. Anywhere he goes right now, he's getting a max deal. He's getting the team to the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. I just love how the players, led by LeBron,
wouldn't think less of him.
No way.
I wouldn't think about it. What's funny is that picture in Miami. I love it because Miami is great. The thing is with Pat Riley. You got to understand the mentality of Pat Riley. This is a guy that has an ego too. This is a guy that was upset about how it all went down. So let's say...
So you think Riley would not take LeBron back?
I would think that it would have to be a real big discussion between him and Mickey Erickson on closing that. You got to understand Pat Riley. He's more competitive than any of us in here. So to allow him to come back into the fold, Pat would have to eat crow a little bit.
But don't you think LeBron wants to come home?
I'm not saying that he won't do it. I'm saying that that discussion is going to be deep within Pat Riley and the circle because of his mentality.
Don't you think, though, it would look like Riley would look like the king?
Well, like I told you, you never should have left.
Yeah.
But for LeBron, the funny part is, and you said this, I think, the best, that's what we're talking about. That is just what we're
you
talking
remember,
about.
He did this Forget last everything. Summer, too. Exactly. He brought up Michael
Jordan.
Football
dominates the summer whole year. LeBron conversation is dominating the offseason of NBA.
Well, don't forget Lonzo Ball has already crowbarred his way in.
He has, but LeBron still, as you talk Lonzo, and then LeBron pops up.
Yeah.
Lonzo.
How about those two on the same team, Jim? You like that next? You like that? Next July?
He's going back to Miami.
No way.
And Pat Riley.
No way.
No state taxes.